Buckeye Extra is brought to you by the Columbus Springs Hospitals, changing people's lives by providing addiction and mental health treatment for adults, adolescents, and children through two Columbus-based hospitals and an outpatient service clinic. Columbus Springs Hospitals. There's hope. There's help. For full information, visit hopeincolumbus.com.
Sports Desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Tuesday, March 6th, 2018. It's my official duty to welcome you into the 18th episode of the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast. That's right, folks. We can vote now. And now that we can vote, I can tell you, dear listener, that I vote for you as my favorite subscriber. Nobody else, just you. So I want to say thanks. Before we dive into everything, thanks to our sponsor, Columbus Springs Hospitals. With two hospitals and an outpatient services clinic, Columbus Springs Hospitals is helping to change people's lives every day. With skilled counselors and compassionate caregivers, they provide effective patient treatment in addiction and mental health for adults, adolescents, and children. Visit ColumbusSprings.com today and find out more about each of their locations. There's hope, there's help at Columbus Springs Hospitals. I will add on the end of that, if you haven't checked out yet, Kevin Love from the Cleveland Cavaliers wrote a really fascinating sort of first-person essay today discussing how he dealt with a panic attack recently and sort of addressing, it was on the Players Tribune, addressing some of his mental health concerns and how it's something that we just don't talk about enough in this country. And it's unbelievably brave and revealing read. And I know we don't talk about Cleveland Cavaliers basketball on here much, but something, if you care about people in general, you care about basketball, you know about Kevin Love, go check it out. It's a great read. It's very revealing. And I think that's something we need to talk more and more about. So as we dive into the team, I want to remind everyone, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes if you search for the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast, and that way you won't miss anything. We had plans to push one out when I was in New York City, but it ended up being a shorter trip than expected and a louder hotel than I had maybe hoped, and made it not a good situation to try to record a podcast. So that's why we waited and knocking one out here now that I'm back in God's country in Columbus, Ohio. So if you're subscribed, you won't miss anything. It'll pop right up on your phone. The best way to make sure that you're keeping up on everything Ohio State basketball as we head in now to the NCAA tournament, which is coming. We got to wait still another week and a half thanks to the Big Ten this season, but the NCAA tournament is coming. So before we look ahead, let's take a look back here at what did transpire at Madison Square Garden, where, as you were probably watching on Friday evening, Ohio State battled Penn State for a third time, gave them a run. At times looked like maybe they were poised to maybe figure out a way to beat that team, and then just, again, couldn't find a way at the end. Ohio State falls in the opening round, well, the quarterfinal round, but their first game of the Big Ten tournament, 69-68 to Penn State. That marks the third Penn State win against Ohio State this season. They become the fourth team to defeat Ohio State three times in one season. The first one since Michigan State did it 2 years ago. And that was the year that Michigan State, I picked them to win the national championship. They go in the NCAA tournament and they got upset in the first round. So, yeah. That was an interesting season, an interesting team for them. But you look at this Ohio State game and you look at how they're able to find a way to snatch a defeat out of the jaws of victory. They're up 68-64 with a minute 49 to play. And you really felt like, at that moment, you're like, all right, now Kata had played an exceptionally strong game. Probably, I would argue, the most effective and efficient game that he's played since he put up 30-odd points in the home win against Illinois a month ago. But he was very much in control of that game. He did a lot of things to keep them pushing, even when the offense wasn't working very well. And then Penn State just kind of finds a way. They get a free throw with a minute 33 to go to cut it to three. Ohio State works the ball around, trying to work some clock. Kata misses a three with a minute four to go. Penn State brings it up, and then major problem in that game, Penn State's ability to get to the glass. When you talk about why Ohio State was behind to begin with and why Penn State had a lead at halftime again against Ohio State, they just dominated the offensive glass. So with 48 seconds left, Josh Reeves misses a layup, gets the rebound, misses the tip-in, gets the rebound, and then draws a foul and hits two free throws. 47 seconds left. Ohio State has the ball. They're still up one. They call timeout with 41 seconds left. I asked a couple of people after the game, asked Chris Holtmann after the game, what were you looking for in that possession? What did you want to get out of that timeout? And the hope, the plan was to get the ball to Kata somewhere at like the elbow extended, give him some room, see if he could draw a foul, see if he can get to the basket. He had been incredibly effective at that all game. Penn State made it very difficult. They overplayed the guards. They made it almost impossible to get the ball to Cada. And then when they did get the ball to Cada, it wasn't where Ohio State wanted him to get the ball. And then they brought over a second defender who knocks the ball loose. You could maybe argue that there was a foul there. There was definitely contact. And the officiating, it's fair to question how that game was officiated in certain stretches. And I do think that that played a role in Ohio State's loss, and that Penn State made 16 free throws and Ohio State attempted 11. I know that was something that the coaching staff was not very pleased about, although they didn't go out of their way to call attention to it. That clearly irked them. So no call there. Penn State has the ball, 17 seconds to go, and everybody in the world knows what's going to happen here. Tony Carr is going to hit a shot. You know, he had 28 in the first game against Ohio State. He had 30 in the second game. They just don't have a matchup for him. So Tony Carr's bringing the ball up. The Garden's on its feet. Ohio State's clinging to this one-point lead. Andrew Dokic is matched up with Tony Carr, and he's got his hand in his face, and you're just thinking, all right, what's going to happen here? Because Andrew had some success guarding Tony throughout that game, and I think if you go back and you look at it, he got some deflections. He had a steal or two. He obviously got burned a couple of times as well, but I think anybody's going to get burned when they guard Tony Carr, especially if you're not the most athletic guy or the biggest guy. But so Tony's got the ball. He's dribbling it down. You're just waiting for him to launch that three. CJ Jackson cheats over just a step or two, and Josh Reeves is completely left alone. He glides right to the baskets. Tony hits him with the pass, slam dunk with 2.8 seconds left. They move it up to 3.1 seconds upon further review, and there you go. Penn State has the win. So Ohio State gets the ball. They try to push it up court like they did against Indiana when CJ Jackson hit the game-winning three, but Penn State did it again with their athleticism and their size. They were able to make it more difficult than Indiana did when CJ brought the ball up, and he sort of got a shot off, but Tony Carr technically he got a hand on it, he was credited with the block. Ball goes nowhere near the basket, and just like that, Ohio State takes its third loss to Penn State in one season. So it's interesting. I've had plenty of people debate me on this point before the game, somewhat during the game, after the game. Did I think that this was a game that Ohio State should win? I mean, I had a number of people make the argument that, you know, how hard it is to beat a team three times, and, oh, hey, look, Penn State's leading rebounder, Mike Watkins, is unable, you know, he's out for the tournament with a knee injury. Like, that's significantly going to impact Ohio State. And my counter to all that was I never thought that any of that had any bearing on why Penn State is so good against Ohio State. When you look at the athleticism and the size that Penn State can bring out, you look at Shep Garner, you look at Josh Reeves, you look at Tony Carr. Tony Carr's going to be playing in the NBA next year. It's just very hard to match up with those guys no matter how good you are. And so when you're dealing with an Ohio State roster that has overcome so many things this season, you can't overcome a lack of size and a lack of athleticism. There are just some things that you inherently are that you can't do anything about. It's just a terrible matchup for Ohio State. And so, you know, when I'm looking at, you know, okay, well, can Ohio State take advantage of playing in the paint without Mike Watkins in the game? Like, can they get it into Caleb? Can Jay Sean have a great game? Can they get the ball on the block and score that way? They really couldn't, partially because their guards just struggle to get the ball moved against Penn State. They struggle to get their teammates in position. And there were some spacing problems on the court when you look back on that game. It was very interesting. You look at guys that normally play a lot of minutes for Ohio State and Jay Sean Tate and Caleb Wesson, and neither of them were really called on all that much. And I got a lot of questions after the game about why Jay Sean sat for roughly the last 8 minutes of the game and why he wasn't in, and, you know, why didn't they go to Caleb more in the paint? And it is interesting to me when you look at the box score and see that Jay Sean Tate only played 19 minutes and he was 4-9 from the field. One of those was a three-pointer, so he's 3-8 on two-point shots, which is where Jay Sean Tate can be Jay Sean Tate. Caleb Wesson played 20 minutes. He scored on the first possession of the game. They went right in him. He had a pretty little right-handed hook shot along the right baseline. You thought, all right, that's going to be their game plan. They're going to get it into him. That was he shot on the first possession of the game. Second possession of the game, they got the ball into him, and he had kind of forced a bad shot. Doesn't fall. Well, he only finished with 5 points. He scored on the first possession of the game. He finished with 6 field goal attempts. 2 of them were in the first minute and a half of the game. Penn State's size, and not to keep harping on it, but when you had Cada Bates-Diop, Caleb Wesson, Jay Sean Tate all in at the same time, there just wasn't room for the offense to move. And Chris Holtmann talked about this on his radio show Monday night. We didn't really get a chance to get into it post-game, but there was the spacing on the court just did not allow Ohio State to get into anything that it really wanted to do. And so as a result, that's why you saw some of the lineups you saw down the stretch. That's why you end up in a situation where Andrew Dokic is guarding Tony Carr at the end of the game. Now, if Ohio State would have had another timeout and maybe an opportunity to call a timeout, I'm sure they would have swapped out Andrew, maybe swap out Cam Williams, put you know, Jay Sean back in the game, try to maybe have him guard Tony Carr. But, you know, that's what happens when you turn the ball over and, you know, the other team's pushing it in the final seconds. You just, you can't do anything about that. So it's interesting, too, to look at when you look at Jay Sean's numbers and just even taking away the statistics, but just looking at the eyeball test, if you want to call it that, it was not Jay Sean's best game of the season. I would argue he struggled as much in that game as he has in any other game this season. He just, when he got the ball in spots where he's normally effective, he wasn't able to finish. He had 2 turnovers, no assists, 10 points, 7 rebounds, but just 4 fouls. That was a big part of it too, and 2 of those 4 fouls came about 90 feet from the basket, and that's a thing that I know really can frustrate Chris Holtmann. Those are mistakes that happen because you let the moment sort of overwhelm, or not overwhelm you, but you let your emotions get away from you. And I think that Jay Sean's obviously a very emotional player, and when you look at why he struggled in that game, I think his emotions were so high because this team went to that Big Ten tournament believing it had a legitimate chance to win it. Not like last year when they talked about it, but clearly didn't mean it. Like, this team thought it could go in there and could win this tournament. And they also, I mean, the chance for some revenge was on the mind of these players. And they might not have talked a lot about it, but I think any competitor at any level, when you've lost twice to the same team in the same season, especially in a season when you've been so doggone good, that is going to haunt you. That is going to burn you. That's going to make you go out there and really try to put it on the line and try to find a way to find that elusive win. And so I think that all kind of added up to a tough situation for Jay Sean, and just a tough game overall for him. So tough loss overall. There's just, you know, there's no good way to say it. I mean, Penn State is probably not going to make the tournament, but they were just a matchup nightmare for Ohio State. And there was just, it's going to be one of those things. We're just going to look back on this in a couple of years and just say, you know, you remember that year that Ohio State, you know, made the Sweet 16 or whatever, but, you know, 3 of their losses were all to a Penn State team that went into the NIT or whatever. It's just, I agree with the overwhelming sentiment I've gotten on Twitter that it's a very odd situation, and it's, sure, it's incredibly frustrating. I know it's tough on the fans. I know it's tough on the coaches, tough on the players. Like I said, having said that, I think that if you looked at it, you know, logically, and you took a step back and you distanced yourself from some of those things, like how hard it is to beat a team 3 times in one season, this was always a game that Ohio State had a very real chance of losing. And I don't think there should be much surprise that this is how it turned out. You just, there are some things you can coach. There's some things you can overcome. There are some things you just can't. And this matchup and some of the physical problems that Penn State presents, I just don't know what Ohio State could do differently. Now, I did have people ask me during the game and even before the game, they were wondering, you know, maybe a player like Musa Diallo, what could he do on a guy like Tony Carr? And I do think that would have been an interesting matchup. We've seen Musa's athleticism at times this season. He's still clearly behind from just a skill standpoint, especially at the offensive end. You can see it. His shot is not developed where it needs to be, and he's still kind of figuring out how to put the ball on the floor and how he can be effective. I mean, the way that Musa Diallo helps his team is with his overall athleticism and his tenacity. I do think he's probably, if not the best athlete on the team, maybe the second best athlete on the team. And you do wonder if, you know, maybe throwing him in for a couple of minutes and letting him take a shot at Tony Carr, maybe that was something that they could have done to try to slow him down. I'm kind of surprised that didn't happen. When you look at how the minutes were distributed, Holtmann went pretty hard on some of his guys. I mean, Caleb played 37, CJ played 33, Cam Williams played 33, Andrew Dokic played 26, Andre Wesson played 24. Micah Potter played 8. Musa didn't get off the bench. And maybe that's, I mean, I don't think that that's, you know, a crime or anything like that. I do think that Musa, having, you know, he's 18 and I think he just turned 18 years in 1 month. You know, he's, like I said, he's still clearly behind, but I do wonder if he might have been able to help. But it seemed like maybe at times, I don't know if this is a fair criticism or not, but it seemed like almost Ohio State maybe got a little bit tight. And I don't know if that was just Chris Holtmann's not really had any success at the Garden. When he was in the Big East at Butler, they went 1-out all 3 years that they played their conference tournament there at Madison Square Garden. They beat Minnesota there this season in a neutral court game, but you know, it almost felt like at times maybe they got a little tight, or they got a little, I don't know, out of their element, or it just seemed like some of the substitutions were a little bit different. And I recognize now and looking back that, you know, with the spacing issues and some of the foul trouble, that might have forced their hand a little bit. But I am a little bit surprised that maybe we didn't see like Musa Diallo get a couple of minutes and see what he could do on Tony Carr, because I don't know that no matter what he brought, and I don't mean this as a slight on Musa, I'm not sure that what he would have brought would have been any worse than anything else. I think that just, it might have been nice to try a new face on him. So having said all that, Big Ten tournament happens in New York City, Michigan. Boy, they look good. I mean, they win the whole thing. They win 4 games in 4 days. Weirdly, their toughest test was Iowa. They're definitely going to be sort of a chic pick to make the Final Four, but that is, you just have to be impressed with how Michigan is playing. You think back to what it was like when Ohio State played them the second time, and just how good Michigan has really proven itself to be defensively. And that's not something they're necessarily known for, but this is a team that you don't, it's so easy to say, that's a team you don't want to see in your bracket, but that is legitimately a team that you don't want to see in your bracket. I don't know that they're a Final Four team, but I do think that you could argue they have as much of a chance as anybody else in the Big Ten to get that far. So very impressive overall weekend for the Wolverines, which I'm sure will not make many listeners of this podcast very happy, but you know, you got to call a spade sometimes. So you sort of take that and you go, now what? You know, now Ohio State loses on a Friday, Big Ten tournament goes on for another 2 days, and then you've got this break. And we've talked so much about this break all season long and about what impact it's going to have on the tournament and the Big Ten teams and how everyone's going to sort of cope and handle it. And in the end, I think it'll be good for Ohio State. I do think it's insane to think that they will play one game in 21 days from like February into March. I mean, that doesn't seem like it should happen. When you go from playing at Indiana on February 23rd, you play in the Big Ten tournament on whatever day that was, March 2nd. And then you won't play again until either March 15th or March 16th, depending on where Ohio State ends up in the tournament. So this week, Ohio State's they're practicing, I believe it was Monday, Tuesday, off Wednesday, practice early Thursday. And then sort of for the sake of variety, but also for the sake of, you know, just reminding guys that, you know, getting them to see new rims and getting them to see new gyms, they're going to go somewhere on Friday and play an inter-squad scrimmage. And unfortunately, scrimmages like that would have to be closed. The NCAA won't let people go watch. I've had some people ask about that. So it will be a closed scrimmage. One place I know they're considering, Chris Holtman mentioned it again on his radio show Monday night, but they might go to Denison University and scrimmage each other on Friday evening and then do like a team meal afterward and sort of make a whole thing out of it just to give them, you know, break up the monotony a little bit and break up a whole week of practice that they really haven't had since the preseason. So I do think that will be interesting. I know Chris Holtman has mentioned that he was going to reach out to Greg Marshall at Wichita State to get some thoughts from him on how you handle a layoff like this when you play a conference tournament a week before the selection show. He said he did talk to Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens called him and they talked about it last week, and Brad gave him some pointers. You know, some of the other Big Ten coaches, like I think John Beilein, or it was either John Beilein or Tom Izzo, said that like they might take their team to the beach for a day or something, or you know, like there's like maybe you go golfing or things like that. But like, you know, do some team building stuff and a chance to sort of maybe reset yourself before you head into the NCAA tournament. I don't think that the layoff will hurt Ohio State. I think that when you look at how well Cade in particular played against Penn State, I think you could see that the rest really helped him. So I would expect him to have a similar effort and a similar game when the tournament opens, like I said, either March 15th or March 16th. So before they get to, or when they learn who they're going to get to play, it's interesting to point out that they're inviting fans to watch the selection show on Sunday with them. So if you're listening to this and you're curious about it, you can go to Value City Arena on Sunday. I believe the doors open at 5. The selection show is at 6. So at like roughly 5:45, Holtman and one or two players are going to address the crowd. There will be food. It's free. It should be a pretty neat thing. And apparently there's going to be like a CBS TV crew there that will probably be showing like live reaction shots around the country. So I'm curious to see what that's going to be like and to watch the players see Ohio State pop up there. I've heard, I got an email today about the tournament that they're doing the bracket reveal, which we all know and we can all agree there's one good way to do the bracket reveal, and they've done it for 100 years, and then they've decided to get cute with it the last couple of years and stretch it out over 2 hours or handle it in all kinds of different ways and just get away from unveiling the brackets like we would all like them to. Well, it sounds like this year the way that is going to work is they're going to unveil all the teams that made it in alphabetical order, and then they're going to unveil the brackets. So to me, that completely removes like so much of the suspense and excitement in watching and waiting to see like, oh, are you going to pop up here? Are you going to pop up here? Where's your name going to show? You're going to find out that you're in and that everyone's going to celebrate, and then you find out who you play. Maybe we're just splitting hairs here. Maybe there's no point in really arguing about that, but I think that's silly, and I'm not excited to see how that's going to play out because it's just going to drag this thing out even longer. So if you're interested in watching all that from Value City Arena, you can do that on Sunday. And if you are there, wave, because I will be there taking video and shooting pictures and doing all the fun things that we do. So there is that. As it stands right now, Ohio State's basically sitting as a 5 seed right now. They were 4 or 5 going into the Big Ten tournament. I thought they could have maybe played themselves up to a definite 4, maybe even a 3 if they would have won the whole thing. But then after the loss, obviously you're not going to move up, and you can only fall as you watch all these other conference tournaments get underway. I had someone tweet me after the game, and they asked if I thought Ohio State, you know, are they're probably, what, an 11 seed or a 13 seed now? And my response is that you don't drop 9 spots with 1 loss. Like, that's not how it works. I understand it's a disappointing loss, but no, I mean, Ohio State, they're a 5 seed. They could ultimately end up a 6 seed. As other teams around them play games and win games and lose games, if they were to fall to a 6 seed, it might not be the worst thing for them. I'll be completely honest. At this point, I still don't even pretend to understand exactly how all the pairings work and how teams get seeded based on geographical preference and location. I don't have all those rules like straightforward in my head, but I do know that as they get a little bit further down on the seed list, it becomes more likely that they could end up closer to Columbus. And obviously the closer sites this season, they could play in Nashville, they could play in Pittsburgh, they could play in Detroit. Those would be the ones that would be the most convenient for Ohio State fans that live within the state that would want to go watch the team in the first 2 rounds of the tournament. As it stands, I keep seeing them projected to go out west. They're more likely right now to be in Boise, possibly in San Diego. I personally would be excited to go to Boise. I don't know what kind of record stores they have in Boise. I've never seen the Smurf Turf, excuse me. So I would be okay with that because I don't know that I'm ever going to go to Boise for any other reason in my life. So, you know, maybe selfishly I'm kind of hoping for that, but it certainly wouldn't be a bad thing if they were closer to Columbus, and that's a little bit of a shorter trip and easier on everybody. You're just going to have to wait and see, because at this point, you know, all the teams around them are playing games right now, and this is how the Big Ten set it up this year. This is just how it's going to be. It won't be like this next year, but I am curious to see, obviously, where it ends up. And if Ohio State ends up as a 5 team, and you see them in one of those tough to predict 5-12 games, I do think that's a very realistic possibility for Ohio State. I did see one projection that had Ohio State as a 5 seed playing 12 seed New Mexico State, which if you've been following this season, former Ohio State point guard A.J. Harris is playing at New Mexico State, is having a really good season, actually, a far better season than I expected from him after watching him 1 year at Ohio State. I had significant questions about whether he was equipped to score and contribute at this level, but he's done a very good job out there at New Mexico State. So that would be an intriguing first-round matchup. I think that would help Ohio State because A.J. Harris, even though he's playing better, is not Tony Carr. And I think that Andrew Dockich and C.J. Jackson and even Cam Williams, maybe, they would be equipped to handle a guard of that size and of that caliber. So, but then presuming they would get past that, they would most likely play in the second round, number 4 seed Arizona. So just take a step back and just appreciate how many storylines would be in play there, and just the attention that would be showered on that game from so many different levels. That would just be that there would be so much intrigue in that game. I'm not even sure that I would know where to start. But so, you know, it's all hypothetical. It's all fun to look at right now. But we'll find out on Sunday. And if you go to Value City Arena, we'll all find out together. Two other things I wanted to mention real quickly. It was I saw this morning the University of Illinois announced that Mark Smith is transferring from the program after his freshman season. And that might be a name that might stick out to Ohio State fans, because that was one of the final recruits that Thad Matta and Ohio State were really in on that they didn't get, that sort of added to the whole picture of Ohio State can't recruit anymore. Thad is not able to recruit at the level he needs to recruit at. Mark was always an interesting case in that he was a baseball player. He's a baseball player, and he was committed to play baseball, I believe, to Missouri. And then he decided to go the football route. I think he had an arm injury, or not the football route, the basketball route. He's from Illinois. Illinois hires a new coach. Brad Underwood makes it a huge priority to keep him there. And it just was not a good season for Mark. And I asked Underwood about him a few times throughout the season when we would have teleconferences and such. And, you know, you talk about how he's going to have a great career and all these great things that he does and all the things that he can build on. And I did see that Mark said something to the effect of it just wasn't a good fit for him. His recruitment struck me as very odd. I had a conversation with a family member of his when it was clear that Ohio State was recruiting him and was going to be, you know, a finalist I believe he did end up taking a visit, but the family member kind of, like, we were talking for a couple of minutes, and then I have to go pick up someone at softball practice. Can I call you back in an hour? I said, okay. So an hour goes by. Of course they don't call. I call back. No answer. I never was able to get this person on the phone again. And it was just very odd that it was a very clear indication to me that Ohio State was not in play, because they wouldn't just blow off a reporter who covers Ohio State if Ohio State was really in play. And then this person got a little flustered like a couple of days later, and they meant to call Greg Paulus, but they called me. And when they realized that I wasn't the coach, they just like immediately hung up on me. But it was a very odd situation, and just, you know, like, I never wrote anything about it because there's nothing really to it other than to say that it was an odd recruitment to cover. And now Mark is going to go elsewhere. So I do wonder what sort of impact he might have been able to have at Ohio State. I think having another guard on the roster would certainly be a major benefit to them, but we'll see where he ends up. Other thing I want to mention is that in Thursday's Dispatch, I'm working on a story, and I don't want to give away too many crazy details right now, but I'm working on a feature on Chris Holtmann. And it's interesting to think that he's been at Ohio State now for 8, 9 months, 10 months. I can't do mental math. But I feel like we sort of know Chris, and we've gotten to get a feel for him and what he's about and what his teams are about. But I'm going to be doing a little bit more of an in-depth sort of deep dive in where he's from and what sort of makes him tick. And so if you're really interested in who Chris Holtmann is and where he comes from, I want to encourage you to check out the Dispatch on Thursday. Either check us out online, dispatch.com, or make sure you pick up a physical copy of the paper, because those are fun too. And it will be fun. I'm excited. I'm talking to him here in a little bit. He had a nickname in high school, and I'm not certain that he's super thrilled about the nickname. I don't want to give that away on here. You'll find it in the paper, but I'm excited to run that by him and see his response. So having said all that, I did ask for some questions on Twitter, and I got a couple quick ones here I want to get in. First one from Bob Goldwyn at Rudy Bucks. He said, if we don't play Penn State in the NCAA tournament, I think we go all the way. Next, we are so good we replace whoever wins the East and then sweep Golden State. Finally, they go back in time and beat the original Dream Team, as long as there's no Penn State. Your thoughts? Well, Bob, I can't argue with any of that. I think that, yes, this is clearly the greatest basketball team in the history of basketball, aside from Penn State. And certainly, if they had not run into the Nittany Lions, they would be the national champion favorites. And I would already be working on a book deal for this summer. So, question from JD at JD Hawkins. He said, what, if any, defensive adjustments were made on Tony Carr by the coaching staff over the three games? That's a good one. It's hard when, like, as I discussed earlier, when you're dealing with just some physical limitations and things that you can't do much about, I don't know that there was much. I guess I don't know what they could have done differently, what sort of adjustments they can make other than, you know, just get more of a hand in his face and be more in his face. But then when you do that, he gets driven around. I mean, I do think they were paying more attention to him. I think that Tony had to work harder this time to get his shots than he did in the other games. He still made them, but I don't have a great answer on that. Just that he was a tough matchup no matter sort of who they threw at them. And I think that that's the limitation of this roster. I think that that's been an issue all season. The fact that they've disguised it as long as they have, or they've dealt with it as long as they've had, or they have, I think is a credit to this team and to the coaching staff. So I don't know. Like I said, maybe they could have played Musa Jallo more. You know, maybe they could have tried Jayshon on him a little bit more, but Jayshon was in foul trouble. So yeah, that's just tough. Question from Eddie Vulek. Eddie, tweet me. Let me know how you say your last name. At Zadea. How will Ohio State better get the ball inside to Wesson? I think that they will get the ball into him better when he continues to grow and establish that he can do it every possession, or that he can be consistently effective down there. I think he has stretches in just about every game where he looks like an all-league type of player, and then he has stretches where he'll force a shot, or he'll get a shot blocked, or you know, something will happen, and it sort of sets him back a little bit. I think he's just going to continue to get better. I think he's, you know, you look at some of the things that Jared Solinger could do. I don't know that Caleb is quite as athletic as Jared, but I think that there are some similar qualities there. I think that maybe you can see that level of production from him in a year or 2 years, but in the Penn State game, there just wasn't space. And when they got the ball to him down low, there were just too many people. And that kind of was what it was. So I think that it's realistic to think that maybe he could have a breakout game in the tournament. Aside from Kata, I think Kata will play well. But like, you know, you could be facing some lower seeded team that just, you know, has a bunch of guards that just run up and down the court on you, but they might not have like a physical presence. And I think that could be a moment where you see Caleb shine. But I think it's something that they'll work on. I think you'll see it significantly more, especially if Kata is not on the team next season. I think then Caleb obviously becomes your number one post option at all times. One question from Britt. There's like four or five T's at Brittany_Ohio. She said, what starting lineups used resulted in the most wins? So I looked this up, and I have all kinds of crazy lineup stats that could fill its own podcast. But Ohio State used 7 different starting lineup combinations this season. But the one that it used the most was C.J. Jackson, Cam Williams, Caleb Wesson, Jayshon Tate, and Kata Bates-Diop. That group of 5 went 12-1 this season as starters. They were 9-1 in the Big Ten together. The starting lineup of C.J. Jackson, Jayshon Tate, Caleb Wesson, Kata Bates-Diop, and Andre Wesson went 3-2 overall, and those were all Big Ten starts. So that lineup had some issues. That was the lineup that they started going with after Cam Williams was suspended. So you saw that includes the Penn State road loss and the Michigan road loss. The lineup also, early in the season, going into the PK80 tournament, which really does seem like a year ago, featured that starting lineup of C.J. Jackson, Musa Diallo, Caleb Wesson, Jayshon Tate, and Kata Bates-Diop. That lineup went 2-4, and then eventually Musa came out of the lineup and Cam went back in the lineup, and then you got the lineup that went on that won 12 out of 13 games. So there you go. Those were the best lineups that Ohio State fielded this season as far as at least starting lineups and wins and losses. And I also got a question from the legend himself, Kyle Robertson at KRobPhoto, who wanted to know, are there any cool trains in Boise? And I might have told this story around the PK80, but when I was in Portland and I got there, somehow it clicked in the back of my brain. My oldest son, Liam, is obsessed with trains. He loves trains, and he has this big book of trains that's his favorite that takes like half an hour to read. And there's a train in there, the Southern Pacific 4449, that is his favorite. And it turned out that train is in Portland. And I don't know how I thought of that or realized that, but a big highlight of that trip for me was I was able to go see the 4449 and FaceTime my son and let him see it come chugging into the station. And it was decorated for Christmas, and it was just unbelievable. And so, yeah, I will have to look and see if there are any trains in Boise. And I'm sure that if there are, I will have to come home with plenty of souvenirs. Every trip to New York this season has resulted in me coming back with a wooden New York City subway car. There's an L train for Liam, a J train for Jardy, a 3 because he's 3, and then I bought him an S train this time. Just, I don't know, it was smaller and it fits up Ferdinand's Bridge. If you know Thomas at all, you'll understand. That kind of runs our life these days. So before I get out of here, I want to say thanks again to our sponsor, Columbus Springs Hospitals. With 2 hospitals and an outpatient services clinic, Columbus Springs Hospitals is helping to change people's lives every day. With skilled counselors and compassionate caregivers, they provide effective patient treatment in addiction and mental health for adults, adolescents, and children. Visit columbussprings.com today and find out more about each of their locations. There's hope, there's help at Columbus Springs Hospitals. So as always, thanks again for listening. Please feel free to send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, your otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardy@dispatch.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Patrick, the Podfather, for pushing the gears and making me sound better. We'll come back probably sometime here, probably right after Selection Sunday, maybe even late Sunday night, to break down where Ohio State is headed and what the NCAA tournament picture looks like for them. So until then, thanks.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.